This is a Career Channel program from UC San Diego Extension. Visit us at www.uctv.tv/careers for videos, employment news, and trend articles to help recent college graduates and grads in career transition bridge to better employment.
Good morning and welcome to Career Talk, a monthly conversation with interesting people who have a direct connection to UC San Diego Extension's courses and certificate programs. I'm John Freeman, Communications Director at Extension, and today I'm very pleased to welcome Fabio Camana, an Extension instructor who teaches not only one course, but four courses in the field of fitness instruction and exercise science. Our theme today will be the science of exercise, how to get fit and stay fit. Thank you for joining me, Fabio.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me here.
So I look forward to our conversation. First, let me take a few minutes, moments really, to tell you more about Fabio and his background. A native of Zambia, a southern African nation just north of South Africa, Fabio has taught UC San Diego Extension courses for nearly 15 years. His role is preparing students for careers as fitness trainers. Currently a faculty member at San Diego State University, where he coached the men's rugby team back in 2000 or so, he's been a dedicated athlete all of his life. So let's get started. Tell me, what made you, going way back, what made you get into fitness as a career?
Well, John, you know, I've come from a competitive family. So my parents got me into competitive sports when I was at the age of five. And, you know, kind of that environment kind of led me to school. And going to school in South Africa, sports participation was mandatory. So we had three trimester program, you know, sort of academic year, and we had to play a sport every trimester. So just naturally, you know, sport was part of my life. And so I took an avid interest in just trying to find ways to improve my own performance, even at a young age. And then I think that just kind of manifested itself into a passion for, you know, understanding human performance and ways to improve human performance.
Now, your courses, as I understand it, are directed much more toward aspiring physical trainers than those who want to learn how to stay in shape and get in shape. What's the market these days for physical trainers? How are things out there?
You know, the job outlook, you know, when we get the, you know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics and they give us the job outlook. So the job outlook for the next 10 years is actually stronger than the average. So the American average is 10.9%. And we're looking at trainers being a little over sort of 13% to almost 14%. So the outlook's a little stronger than average. But the nice thing about personal training is that it becomes a springboard into so many other careers in allied health. And so when we look at one of the top careers that's emerging right now, it's occupational therapy assistants. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of personal trainers can actually sort of migrate into physical therapy assistants, physician assistants, because they get that academic background in sciences, those foundations. And that, as I said, it becomes their springboard to go elsewhere.
Now, it occurs to me that someone who's a fairly good athlete, as yourself, but someone who says, I can teach, I can tell someone how to be a good athlete, how to get in shape, is that all it takes, or do you really have to get academic and get some credentialing going?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we're a self-regulated entity. When I say we, the fitness industry is self-regulated. Unlike, say, doctors that have a governing board, dietitians have a governing board, we're self-regulated. So as an industry, we have been trying to raise our own bar. So there is an accreditation process. And so what's been sort of recommended or encouraged to all club operators is to sort of ensure that there is some standards of, you know, sort of care and standards of skill for personal trainers. And those are certifications that are kind of developed by these, you know, sort of credentialing organizations. And there's a lot of good ones out there. And so there is a standard that we're trying to follow. But the interesting thing you bring up is that the field of training as we know it is evolving. It's now becoming coaching. And there's a bit of a difference between coaching and training. Mm-hmm. And so the trainer of tomorrow is going to be much different than the trainer of yesterday. And it's going to take a certain set of skills, not just in the exercise sciences, but also in the art of communication and behavioral change.
Mm-hmm. So what makes a good trainer?
You know, it's interesting. I talk to my students, and I when I'm teaching them, I really, you know, we sit there and we talk about all the exercise science. We talk about the nutrition and the biomechanics and the exercise
science
physiology.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the very end of it, I say, guys, but you know what's going to be the most important, the four most important words I could teach you that could really help you in your professionally? Is to listen, is to ask, is to understand, is to respond. And that's really about communication. And I think that's what makes a good trainer, someone who's able to ask the right questions. You know, it was Jonas Salk who said, you know, the moment of discovery, what many think of the moment as the moment of discovery is the discovery of the right question. And I think if you ask the people that you're helping the right questions, you will unlock the answers that's going to really help them find, you know, their solutions. And all we are is facilitators mm-hmm. to that solution.
Now, what makes you an especially good trainer? What are the aspects of your personality and your background that make you good at what you do?
Well, you know, I think we're always improving. I, you know, the word good, I guess it's all relative, but I think, you know, I've had some success, and I think part of my success has been learning through my mistakes and learning about how things are changing. And I'll tell you this, I used to come from, you know, being a coach, that very directive mindset that, mm-hmm. you know, I say jump and you say how high. Mm-hmm. And that was a very directive approach. It was very self-focused where I thought, hey, I know what's right for you. I've got the expertise. So let me tell you what you need to do. And I realized the error of my ways. So I think what's really been my valuable lesson has been learning really to understand how to communicate with people and to basically, you know, understand how to facilitate behavioral change. So I think what makes me successful I don't even like to use the word trainer anymore because I think we're evolving to coach, is the fact that I have my strengths in the exercise sciences, but I'm also building my strengths in behavioral coaching and communication. And I think those put together make someone successful in this type of field.
Mm-hmm. Now, you are a faculty member at San Diego State, mm-hmm. and you teach the same, I'm guessing, the same sorts of courses at Extension. What do you see these days in the, shall we say, the caliber of students or the dedication of the students that you get at San Diego State and Extension? Are people more apt to be communicators these days?
You know, it's interesting because I think I have a very diverse, there's a big dichotomy between the two types of students I get. You know, at San Diego State, you know, a good number of students are following a career path, you know, or a curriculum to prepare them for some sort of, you know, diploma. And this is something that, you know, some of the classes they go into, not necessarily voluntarily, they go into because it's part of what they have to take. It's mandated as part of their mm-hmm. their undergraduate curriculum. And so I some of them don't have the passion. They're just kind of going through the motion, so mm-hmm. to speak. I also think that in the younger generations, we're seeing a little bit of a change. And I think, you know, social media and technology is part of this. I think communication, as we know it, is sort of slowly eroding. You know, we're doing everything via text messaging and SMS. I think we've lost that art of communication, talking to a person one-to-one. I'm seeing it in my papers being turned in, the quality of writing. When people are doing, you know, sort of presentations in my class, the quality of how they articulate and, you know, just their syntax and everything. I'm seeing.
But their texts are great, aren't they?
Messaging would be great.
I understand.
But when I look at UCSD's program, it's a very different sort of group of people. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the intimacy that are smaller classes. Mm-hmm. But what I definitely have found is that it's a older group. So they're definitely more mature. Some of them still value kind of old school communication. And they're there because they want to be there. This is something they're taking out of their time, given their busy careers and their busy lives, to be there. So I think they're definitely more passionate, more committed to this. So I definitely find there's a very different experience when I'm teaching the students there versus teaching the students at San Diego State. And no disrespect to the students at San Diego State. I mean, some of them are extremely passionate about wanting to be the best that they can be. But because it's sheer scale of numbers, I don't see that same passion as I see in my smaller classes. Mm-hmm. And that's just a factor of the classroom environment, too. When you've got smaller classes, it's a little bit more intimate, and I think there's more, you know, willingness for people to engage in discussion and participate in kind of, you know, sort of any of the tasks that we set in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. So are your courses, I'm thinking, more science-based than consumer-based, or is that a distinction that you make?
You know, we start off with, for example, at UCSD, we start off with our foundational classes. And so the program there is a curriculum. And so, you know, we kind of have two cohorts. We have a spring and a fall cohort that comes mm-hmm. through. And what we do with them is, you know, we start off with the foundational sciences. So we give them, you know, the relevant science. We don't go into the same detail like we would at a comparable class at San Diego State because we just don't have, the contact hours, and B, we don't feel that all of that is relevant. Mm-hmm. So we're really kind of preparing them to have that competency in enough science so they can help others. But then we also make it very practical in its application. So we use a lot of, you know, the live environment, the scenarios and type of stuff. But then, so once someone's gathered those foundational sciences, and we really have three foundational classes. There's a nutrition, there's an exercise physiology / human physiology, and then there's an anatomy and kinesiology. Then we take them into some other classes. We take them into more the expansion of their skill sets. So we take them into, you know, a strength and conditioning class, a fitness assessment class, a lifestyle coaching class, and we have a few of those other classes that are sort of built around. So really it's designed to help prepare them to help the consumer.
So these courses are not, I'm thinking, these are not easy courses. These are not breezed through, and I'm going to do a few push-ups and a few jumping jacks and get through.
No.
These are really serious. You're serious in your pursuit of this career.
Sure. You know, we are also in the process now of developing some additional classes where we can be very consumer-centric, which mm-hmm. would be, you know, for the person that just wants to take a distance learning class, and they would just like to learn how to improve their body. So we're building right now a 10-hour course, which will be delivered online through UCSD's extension.
Oh, terrific.
And that class will be for, you know, my mom could take that class. So that's going to be very consumer-friendly. But you're absolutely right. The curriculum right now is intensive. It's vigorous. It's not, you know, preparing them for a, you know, it's not, they're not earning a degree, but it's a vocational curriculum where
it's
we're preparing them.
Yeah.
And we're preparing them for everything they need to be competent as a professional to be able to help others empower change.
Now, I noticed that one of the courses that you offer and teach is the physiology of exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And that intrigued me because what exactly is the physiology of exercise?
So really, it's interesting because a lot of people ask that same question. So I get human physiology because you're understanding how the body works.
Body works, yeah.
So what we do is we actually, you know, so in a traditional curriculum, someone would go through human physiology and then they would then qualify after completing their prerequisite for exercise physiology. And really to define exercise physiology, we're talking about investigating the acute and chronic responses to stresses and exercise being a stress. So we're looking at both good and bad because, as we know, stress is a non-specific response. Your body doesn't know the difference between exercise stress and life stress. It's the same physiological response. But obviously, an exercise stress is in short little bouts, and because you have the recovery after that, your body adapts wonderfully to it. Whereas life stress sometimes never goes away, and that can actually compromise your health. So we're really investigating that. So what we do at UCSD, though, is we kind of blend those two classes together. We give a lot of the students who don't have a background in science enough of an understanding of, hey, this is how the cardiovascular system works.
Mm-hmm.
This is the heart. This is the blood. This mm-hmm. is the vessels and the arteries. Now, this is what happens when you get into an exercise program. So under the stress of exercise, these are the responses to your heart. And then if you were to do an exercise program, the chronic adaptation is going to be all these wonderful health benefits. And so we kind of go through systematically all the systems of the body, the energy systems, the cardiovascular system, which is the heart and the vest and the bloodstream. We go through the pulmonary, which is your breathing, the thermoregulation. You know, we go through your neural system, your muscular system. We teach you how is it that a muscle grows. So, you know, you've got to provide the stimulus. So we're kind of helping them understand how the body works at the same time, how it responds to exercise.
Mm. Well, it brings up a question in my mind, and it's kind of an old adage, no gain without pain. What's the commonly accepted is that commonly accepted these days, or is that going too far?
You know, it's interesting because I think it's first of all, I'll tell you this: that's a bad mantra
bad
to have. But it is kind of we've kind of come full circle because
I see that in, you know, high school football locker rooms.
I had it myself growing up. I remember my coaches telling me, you know, if you don't feel the pain, there is no gain. You know, so but we've learned, we've got smarter, and research has told us that, you know. So now they started coining the phrase. No, it's strain, not pain. And I don't even think the word strain, because strain has connotations of
mm-hmm.
an injury,
mm-hmm.
right? But I think what we're seeing in this time and age is that we're coming full circle where, you know, let's be honest, everyone's pressed for time. So these time-efficient workouts, you know, the CrossFits and all those things have become very popular now because people can get in, get out, and get on with their lives. And so what's happening is people have this mindset that, you know, the reason I exercise is that pursuit of the mighty calorie, which unfortunately is a very, you know, unrealistic and it's distorted perception of why you should be exercising. But nonetheless, it is what has been propagated out there through infomercials and the media and everything. And so people come in and they go, well, if I've only got 20 minutes, I got to work out as hard as I can. It's that go hard or go home mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the human body, we're becoming progressively more deconditioned. You know, look around, you know, obesity levels are up.
In other words,
levels are up.
Not fit, but
exactly.
Fat.
Exactly. You know, so everyone's trying to do this, convert myself from fat to fit or flab to fab in 20 minutes three times a week. So mm-hmm. they're just training themselves hard. And unfortunately, when we look at the statistics, injury rates in recreational events and recreational type outlets like gyms and recreational exercise like me going to the gym,
mm-hmm.
those injury rates are up 4% across the board.
Uh-huh.
So more people are getting hurt because this, you know, pain, no gain mentality is coming full circle. And unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
it's not a good mindset to have. And that's really what we're trying to advocate at the university, that, you know, for a lot of people, the word exercise has horrible connotations. You know, even the word fitness does. So it's not about exercise or fitness to some people. It's about ability training. It's about movement. And when we look at the research on weight loss, really the solution to losing weight for most people doesn't lie in the exercise session. It lies in what you do the rest of the day. and what you eat.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So I heard something the other day that is apparently coming into vogue, and I thought it was very interesting. It is that sitting is the new smoking.
Yep.
Thus, when you sit all day at your desk and do nothing, you are doing as much, they claim, as much harm as if you were smoking.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Absolutely. So this is that. You're piggybacking on what I was just kind of, you know, sort of alluding to there. This research started evolving in 2008, 2009. Levine over at the Mayo Clinic has been a big pioneer in this. In fact, he was one of the pioneers of the standing workstation.
Mm. And it's a very clever saying, by the way, sitting is the new smoking.
Yeah, I think it is wonderful, and it really drives home the message. And here's an example. You take an average American woman right now. She weighs 166.2 pounds. That's the latest data we have, right?
I'm thinking that's larger than should be.
Yes,
okay,
it is.
All right.
Because she's 5'4.5".
All right.
So that's a little heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And if she was able to find in her workday, so again, we're not asking her to go squeeze out an extra hour of exercise, right? But in her day, if she could stand for 2 hours of her day, not continuously, just, you know, while she's texting, while she's on the phone, doing these little odds and ends, she could not move around, just stand for 2 more hours of her workday. So let's take 5 days of the week, 50 weeks of the year. That could translate to an additional 11.1 pounds of weight loss over a period of a year.
Now, so sitting, in a general sense, causes weight gain
It's the inactivity. So as you stand, you burn more calories. But it's also a postural benefit, and there's all sorts of wonderful benefits associated with standing. And so, but just that difference of finding 2 hours in your day, carving it out, so not trying to squeeze in an extra hour of you know, a trip to the gym. Just, this is what I do in my regular business office. If I can do it standing rather than sitting for just 2 hours, I'm not talking about 8 hours, do that 5 days of the week over the period of 50 weeks, that becomes 11.1 pounds in the year. That's the equivalent of about almost 140 trips to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have to ask someone, do you have the time to go to the gym 150 times? Do you have the inclination?
Mm-hmm.
Or can we find simpler solutions like just finding ways to stand up?
Mm-hmm.
So exactly what you talked about, the research is there. I won't go into the science of what's causing that mortality, but if we can find people to stand more, it's a game changer. And it's funny because we went from asking people to exercise, which they wouldn't do, then to saying, please just move around. And they wouldn't do that either.
Now we're saying, by the way, don't smoke.
And then now we're just saying, please stand up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
how desperate we've become. But the reality is that's where we're finding solutions. That's the new frontier of weight loss, is standing.
What does it take? This is a very general question, but what does it take to be healthy?
I'd say
live a healthy life.
I'd say, you know what, first of all, the definition of healthy is such a nebulous term. But
yes.
I think if there's one thing I would ever say to people, it's being mindful. Because I think the environment plays such an important role in influencing our behaviors. The way we think and the way we feel ultimately driving our behaviors, so the reactions and responses that we have to events. I think if you could be more mindful, and I always come back to the one word, moderation is always going to serve us well. But I think if you could be mindful of the things that you are or are not doing. For example, keeping a track of how many hours do you spend sitting in a day? And then just finding ways to maybe say, could I stand for an hour? Being more mindful.
Mm-hmm.
I think for those people that say, I don't want to go to the gym and exercise, you can still achieve wonderful health benefits from just being more mindful.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about what you eat?
No, that's saying mindful of what you
is
eat.
It? It's when, what, and how much.
Absolutely. Right? So just being more mindful of, you know, your dietary danger zones. You know, for example, going to a restaurant. You know, I give people a simple challenge. Enjoy your appetizer, your drink, and your dessert.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
What about the entree? You forgot the entree.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking of those. If I can ask you to say, hey, how about this? Here's a challenge. Instead of choosing all three, choose two out of the three.
I see.
Your choice.
Yeah.
But these little things can make a difference. Because here's the difference. If you can take a 100-calorie differential in a day, in other words, if I can cut back on your calories or find a way to help you expend a little bit more calories, 100 calories in a day, that's walking for 20 minutes. That's all it is. But even if I can get half of that out of walking, so a 10-minute walk, and maybe cut back on one snack, John, in a year, that's 10.5 pounds. Small little things can make a huge difference.
And the other thing about eating, and I think it does relate closely to fitness, is the portion sizes at these restaurants are massive. And they feed not just two, but three people. But we feel compelled, maybe growing up, we have this guilt, but we feel compelled to eat every bite.
It is true, and you know this concept of portion distortion. You know,
portion distortion. What a great
And I think
line.
We've kind of lost track of what it is. But here's the quick reality of it: is We find in America, Americans tend to stop eating when they feel full, whereas other nations that are leaner tend to stop eating when they feel satisfied. Mm. And what's driven, we find Americans generally stop eating based on external cues, like the plate is empty, whereas in other nations, they tend to focus on internal cues. And yes, our portion sizes are larger. So there's a huge science and an environmental influence around that. But absolutely, I think one of the things we all have to get under control is understanding portion sizes. And if you can diminish a portion size by about 20%, most people won't feel that you're depriving them of food. Mm-hmm. Once you start, you know, lessening portion sizes by the magnitude of 30%, then people feel consciously deprived of food, and they start to fight. They start to resist that. Mm. So there's a lot of little things we can do, you know, to kind of alleviate that portion distortion concept. But I agree with you 100%. Portions are out of control, and the portion tax is something that I actually think it's a great idea.
I have two more quick questions.
Sure.
What's worse, too much salt, fat, or sugar?
That's a tough one. You know, in the old days, we've always focused on fat, fat, fat. We know that sodium is a problem. American intake of sodium is way too high, and that's the silent killer with hypertension. But to nail it down, given the magnitude of health effects that we're seeing with fat and sugar, it's been interesting. For the longest time, we've always really focused our attack on fat. But I think it's shifting now that the focus is really on sugar now because of the inflammatory diseases associated with sugar. So if I had to choose one, I'm going to go sugar.
Sugar. Okay. Well, I'd like to thank my special guest, Fabio Camana, for joining me this morning. It's The Sweet Science of Fitness. Been a fascinating look into the world of fitness and his role as an extension instructor for UC San Diego Extension's Career Talk. This is John Freeman. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.